Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Catherine Hunter Williams. And many of you know her from her work at the Playmakers, where she is on stage four or five times a year in leading roles and in supporting roles for the wonderful Playmakers productions. She's also a teacher at the University of North Carolina, a professor at the University of North Carolina in the drama department and English department, I think, too. I
mean, just drama.
Just drama. And she's been doing something else along the way that we're going to hear more about with an organization called Hidden Voices. But her work with Hidden Voices has led to the Playmakers' first production of the season. It's called The Count. And can I call you Kathy?
Yes, please.
Kathy,
yes,
tell us. Yes. You're the director. This is your directing debut, and this is also the world premiere of this production, The Count. Tell us about The Count.
Well, Count is it's a very, very exciting venture. Hidden Voices has been around for about 15 years, and Lennon Harris is our executive director, and I am her associate director. And we've done various pieces around the area.
So pieces, drama productions.
Yeah, so. Performances. And I generally direct those for the company, for Hidden Voices. This is our first, co-production with Playmakers Repertory Company. And this is a very exciting moment for us. Count is about a day in the life of six men who are destined to die in prison, six men on death row. All of the stories in the piece are true, but the characters are fictional. This comes out of our work that we have done in the last four and a half, maybe 5 years, with interviews and workshops with men on death rows across the country. So we've worked with men here in North Carolina, and we've also collected letters, maybe through some phone calls, with men across the country, and sort of to talk to them about their experiences, their reflections on life, and sort of their stories, gathered stories about their lives. And out of all of those hundreds of hours of interviews and hundreds of pages of transcripts, Lyndon Harris, who is the playwright for Hidden Voices, she's put together a piece called Count. And it takes place in one day, and it's about these men as they just move through this particular day, this special day, and reflect on how they ended up where they are. And I want to say one thing about the play that we particularly want to focus on, which is the play is really about the idea of how do the guilty live. So this is a piece in the play. The men are guilty of the crime of which they've been accused. And it's really an examination of how do they go on? How do you live a meaningful life? And this is something that we found through our work with interviews and the workshops that we did with the men in these prisons, that they, because many of them, of course, if you're sentenced to die, and we let me just say this also, we also interviewed men who were sentenced to life without parole, either as juveniles or as adults. So we've got kind of a wide, you either, you know, are sentenced to die by execution or you're sentenced to die in prison just because that's where you'll spend the rest of your life. So their reflections on how the choices that they made, they are now able to stand back and look at some of the factors in their lives that were out of their control, the influences of both where education may be, whether poverty, race, how all these issues have played into where they're standing today. And they have a remarkable, the ones that we worked with, because I don't want to make a generalization about all men on death row, but the ones that we worked with, there's a remarkable ability there's just a remarkable reflection on life and a remarkable ability to be very present and to love and cherish each moment.
Well, do they have anything to teach us about our lives?
I think that they do. You know, whenever we start a project, we always ask our participants, what do you want to see come out of this project? We don't ever go in with sort of an idea of what we want to tell the world about blah, blah, blah. And I can tell you a little bit about some of our other projects, down the line. But so one of the things we asked was, what would you like to see come out of this?
This is the prison. You're talking to the prisoner?
Mm-hmm.
And you,
to the men.
Does the prisoner invite you in, or do you contact the prisoner and say, here's who we are, and we'd love to talk to you if you want to talk? How does that work?
Well, see, for us, it's really interesting because Hidden Voices, pretty much every piece that we do, there is someone in the audience who sees a performance and after the performance, someone will come up to us and say, I have an idea, and this is a subject that I'm interested in, or this is a story I want to tell. Our mission statement at Hidden Voices is to bring underrepresented voices into a public forum to facilitate change. That's what we do. That's what we believe in. That's the power of theater. That's the power of storytelling. That's the power of somebody being able to tell their own story, right? To tell their write their own narrative. So this piece really came out of that. We did a piece about maybe 5 years ago called None of the Above, and it was about the school to prison pipeline. So it was about that connection between school suspension rates and incarceration rates. And someone in the audience saw that and came up and said, this just speaks so much to the population I work with. Would you all be interested in doing some workshops with men on death row? And that's how it began.
Well, give us a sample maybe of the conversations that you might have had or with one of the death row prisoners that turned out to be meaningful to you, maybe meaningful enough to put in this current production, the Playmakers production of The Count.
Sure. We often would start with just because there was a great deal of writing involved. You know, some of these men have been on death row for 20, 25 years. So there's a lot of time for reflection. And the death row population is a little bit different than general population because there is, I'm going to say there is a sense of calm, mainly because of the sentence that they're facing. So it's not that there's the jockeying for hierarchy. There's not that sense of because they're not – everyone is destined for the same end. So there's a different kind of atmosphere, I would say, on death row. Sometimes I've heard some of the men refer to it as sort of a forced monastery because there is – I have to say, of course, not everybody is like this. But there is great deal of reflection. There's a great deal of contemplation. There's a great deal of examination of their lives. So we would often start with a writing prompt, and it could be anything from, you know, what is your earliest memory, or when did you first encounter violence, or what's your earliest memory of, of seeing a gun, or you know, tell us just about what was your earliest childhood memory, along with, you know, what do you remember about school. So we would take these pieces, develop the pieces through these writing prompts. And of course, you know, Lyndon Harris, you know, bless her heart, who in her brilliance really takes all of this writing. And
this is the playwright.
This is the playwright. This is our executive director, Lyndon Harris. And she really takes all of this writing, this beautiful, raw, poetic, majestic writing, and she culls it into a performance piece. So she manages to take many stories. As I said, these characters that you'll see on stage at Playmakers at the Keenan Theater at PRC Squared, you'll see a compilation of these stories. It's not just one person's story. And the reason we do this with pretty much all of our work is because there's so many common threads through these men's lives.
So you, when we go to see the production, you'll have several different actors who are playing the parts and giving voice to the stories. And does each actor play one part, or are they playing multiple parts? And how does the director make that work?
Yeah, well, good question. we're going to find out next week. this is the fun of it, the challenge of it, because it's – I said to Lyndon the other day, I said, I think you've created a new kind of theater, because it's not quite docudrama, which is really straight documentary theater where you take maybe verbatim interviews or stories and you use them to create a dramatic piece. But it is a sort of a combination of all of the stories being absolutely true, but the characters and the world in which they're moving is fictional. So let me go back a little bit. One of the coping mechanisms that I observed is that there, with this ability to reflect and to think about your life, is there is also this great ability for your imagination to carry you at certain points in the day. I mean, if you've never been inside, and most of us have not been inside a prison, most of us have not been on death row, so to understand the monotony, the lack of activity day after day after day after day after year after year after year is hard for us to imagine. But they do have an ability to tap into their imaginations and to, when they choose to open up to whatever circle they choose to open up to share parts of their lives. So part of it is that the men are sharing some of these stories and memories from growing up as they move through the day, as they talk about there's an issue that's kind of, I don't want to be, it's a spoiler alert, so I won't go into the plot
well,
of it.
Well, take us as far as you can with that book, and it may, that spoiler... on the cliff of the spoiler, it may be the thing which would draw us to want to come see it. So
right.
Tell us as much as you can without giving it away.
Yeah, there's a central issue to what's happening in this particular day. And as they sort of weigh the pros and cons of it, we learn a lot about them, their past lives, and the events in their lives. And we also, my goal as a director is to help the audience see the parallels and the overlap where we see the violence, where we see some of the racism, where we see the sexual abuse and physical abuse, where we see the exposure to drugs, where we see the mental illness. Mm-hmm. These are things and stories that both Lyndon and I discovered over collecting these stories over the years. Death Row is kind of a microcosm of our society.
Yeah.
And we know, you know, that disproportionately people of color are on death row and convicted, given death sentences. But we also know that, you know, people, it's poor people. You know, people are, I don't think there's anybody wealthy on death row.
Is that right?
I don't think so. I'm saying
none of the people you all talked to
were not. I mean, I think,
well,
you know.
You mentioned about predominantly African-American males on death row, but they're white. White men too, and did they make it to the production,
yes,
or is this all?
Yes. We try to give as much because there is a real microcosm of cultures and people inside. So we try to we're representing that on stage with our cast. The cast is pretty diverse, you know, and there certainly are both black and white men on death row. It's just that given the percentage of the population.
It does,
you know, we know that people of color are just
overrepresented on death row.
Yeah.
I have a friend who deals with psychiatry, and he says, "Show me this population of people in trouble and screwed up a little bit, and I will tell you that every one of them was abused as a child."
Well,
is he right, or is he exaggerating, or is that?
I don't think so. I mean, I think when you start to hear these early stories where. Let me piggyback to where I started, which is that when we asked the men what they wanted to see come out of this, one of the things that they said, their number one, was that they want people to know that we're not monsters, that we are humans. And I think there's a great story about redemption and forgiveness as well. You know, I mean, when is a person, you know, deemed can be forgiven? You know, if a person has moved so far beyond where they were when they committed a crime or when they came in. As a society, what are we, you know, it's a big question that I think I would love people to walk away from the production wrestling with. So in their efforts to say, you know, we're human beings, and certainly nobody is saying I didn't do it. I mean, we don't talk about the crimes. They never talk about their crimes with us when we're working with them, and we don't ask. That would be inappropriate, and it's not why we're there. But so there's the acknowledgement of what happened, but there is also now an understanding of how the steps that led up to that event, and common among that is violence. I mean, the types of violence that these men see from very young ages is overwhelming. Mm. You just can't believe it. You just think it's so far removed from what I would expect many of us grew up doing.
We're visiting with Catherine Hunter Williams, who is the director of the Playmakers world premiere production of The Count. She and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Catherine Hunter Williams. If you joined us late, she's a great actress. That's how we know her best. She's also a teacher in the drama department at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And now this is her debut. Well, we're saying it's her debut direction as a part of the Playmakers, but we learned that for an organization called Hidden Voices, which is a part of the partnership producing The Count for the with the Playmakers. She's been directing a few productions on the side. So really not your debut. But you're telling us about The Count, and you're telling us about the prisoners who are at the center, the death row prisoners who are at the center of this production, and alerted us that they're going to be telling that their voices are going to be there as the actors who represent them tell their story. Well, so tell us one of those stories. Tell us your favorite story, or tell us one of the stories to give us a flavor of what we might see and hear.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one of the ones that stands out for me, and our actors are great. Our company is just really, really terrific.
Well, all right, we'll interrupt, and if you want to, sell us your company.
Well, I'll tell you, because it's a little bit different than what Hidden Voices normally does. So our actors are, we have Jeff Cornell, who everybody
will
know.
He's a regular star playmaker.
He is. My dear Jeff, he's a member of the company. Gil Faison, who is another local actor who people will know from working in the Chapel Hill, Durham, and Raleigh area. And then we have four actors from out of town. So we've got Brian D. Coates, and we've got Chris Berry, and we've got Richard. I'm going to forget Richard's last name.
Well, these are out of towners. They're not part of Hidden Voices.
Right.
These are professional actors that you've recruited to be a part.
That's right.
Expensive
That's
people.
Right. Well, I want to talk a little bit about how this came about.
Okay.
This is a really.
But you're going to come back and tell us your favorite story after you finish with this. Okay.
I am. But what happened with Hidden Voices applied for a MAP grant, which is a national grant. We were very fortunate to be able to.
I don't know what MAP grant is.
A MAP grant is a part of the Doris Duke Foundation, and it's a company, it's a grant that is, I'm going to put my glasses on here for a second just to make sure I get this right, but it was really looking for, they're looking for programs that talk about human progress through the arts. And they're talking about, so they give grants for artists that will look at questions and disrupt sort of views and challenge notions of social and cultural hierarchy across the American landscape. And it's a very competitive grant. We applied for it twice, and we got it actually last year or 2 years ago.
So you got the money, and we're getting the payoff for a very modest fee. We're going to have a very expensive production that
right.
is subsidized by the grant.
And my great partner in all of this is Playmakers, which is, as you know, I mean, my artistic home, my artistic family, and Vivian Benish, our new artistic director. You know, when we talked about it, and I, you know, just as her interest in new plays, and she was just so gracious to say, why don't we partner with you and let us, you know, put this on as our first PRC Squared production. So normally Hidden Voices uses our participants because our work comes out of the community, and we always use the same approach. We get a group of people who are interested exploring in the subject. We gather what we call a group of stakeholders, which means people who, you know, have a stake in this issue. So it would be, you know, in this case, the wardens and police officers and prisoners when we did our school to prison pipeline piece, you know, we talked to teachers and students and principals, and, you know, we call those stakeholders. We gather the interviews, and normally we ask some of our interviewees, would you like to be in the performance? And eventually we gather a small company.
And so some of the prisoners can be in the performance. Well,
in this particular case, we cannot have.
I know, but in sometimes in Hidden Voice, you'll have the.
A few years ago, when we were working with the Women's Correctional Institute in Raleigh, some of the women.
Get them out for a minute to do that.
Yeah, they were able.
But this production now, I'm going to push you down. I'm going to push you now to tell me one of the stories. This production. World premiere production of The Count at Playmakers in cooperation with Hidden Voices is based on stories that death row prisoners are telling, and it's set in one day, but we're going to hear the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just pushing you to tell me one of those stories.
So one of the stories that every time they perform it, it really touches my heart is a story about the encounters with violence that when they're from a very young age. So we have a couple of stories in there where the men are remembering things from when they were 3 or 4 years old and just about their exposure to violence, either seeing a parent that's being hit, a mother that's being abused, that's, you know, subject to some great violence by a stepfather or a father figure, or watching a father figure, horribly beat and fight someone almost to the point of death. And it's their reflections on how young they were and how just deeply embedded that became in them that stick out the most to me. It's nearly impossible to pick just one story. Because they're all in and of themselves are just so beautiful.
Well, just give me one.
But that's the one I would say. Mm-hmm. Just the story about a little boy who is out to buy some candy from visiting an aunt. And is having a great summer day and goes to the candy lady next door and, buys a couple of, sugar cookies and a Hershey's Kisses. And then hears gunshots. And by the time he gets back to his aunt's house, she's dead.
And oh, my God.
He feels in that moment that his childhood, that was it. And this is three. This is four. I mean, I knew what I was doing at three and four, at least what my mother told me I was doing. So to understand, to juxtapose that with my own growing up experience with this memory that this man has of that's how it started. That's four. You just feel like, wow, your life and then the violence just is a constant undercurrent that's always running through your life. And so then when we get to the point where and we don't discuss the crimes in the piece.
You mentioned this is not about the crimes they committed or their reflections on the crimes that they committed, is it?
There's a little bit of that in there, but not a whole lot. It's mainly about their moving, how they live, knowing that they're destined to die, knowing that there is a clock ticking with them. And what have they learned and what do they want to, what do they share with the world? What do they have to share with the world now?
If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Catherine Hunter Williams. We're talking about the world premiere production by the Playmakers in association with Hidden Voices of The Count. And Kathy, you and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with one of the Playmaker star players, Catherine Hunter Williams, who's taken on a different role in cooperation with Playmakers in an organization called Hidden Voices to bring the world premiere of a dramatic production called The Count. And Kathy, you've been so nice to tell us about some of these things. Jump in. But the challenge that I would see in this bringing together the voices of prisoners who are on death row and hearing their interesting stories. I mean, that's one thing, but the challenge that your playwright has and that you have is to make that more than a conversation and to have a dramatic art. You can describe an arc that, that we have some tension and how do you reframe the conversations? And then you, as the director, make that work so that I'm not only happy to hear the conversations, but I feel like I've seen a real dramatic production.
Right. Well, Lyndon has done a great job of, as I said, there is a source of tension between the men. There is some conflict between the men.
So the way it's framed, you have these guys know each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so they're going to have some conflict between them or different ideas that you're going to make into a dramatic.
Yeah, there is a central question that the men are wrestling with in the middle of the play that is the dramatic tension, that is the conflict within the play. It's a thing I think we don't think about, but a lot of times these guys are together. And it's different in every prison across the country, but the way that we have framed it is that, they've been, this particular group has kind of been together for about 15 to 20 years, all sentenced around the same time, some a little bit earlier, some a little bit later. But then as they've gone through the appeal process and as they are waiting, they've kind of formed, this has become their family. Men on death row are not allowed contact visits. Up until about a year ago, our men in North Carolina only got one 10-minute phone call per year at Christmas. Now, that's just recently changed because they've gotten phones on death row, and now their men are much more able to be in contact with their family. But before that, really, the men that you were with, depending on how you choose to do your time—
What do you mean? What choices do you have?
Well, I'm sure that there are some men, because there's mental illness is rampant, there are some men who are probably either, you know, overly medicated or maybe under medicated. There are some men who, you know, as a way of doing time, they, you know, they seal themselves off. They don't, you know, I mean, you know, you can, you sort of decide how you're going to walk through this phase of your life. So this is about a particular group of men who have found a sense of family that they spend so much time together. They know a lot about each other. They know a lot about their lives. And when you're together for 20 years in an environment like that, this group becomes the people that you bond with. And that's a little bit about – that's a part of the story as well.
So the death row prisoners are not in solitary confinement. They do have contact with their fellow death row prisoners.
Right.
And maybe other prisoners as well?
Or no. Well, generally, death row populations are isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, different prisons across the country will have different rules. In some prisons, some of them in that communicated with us, they were in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day, yet they had access to phones. Some men were in situations where they were not in solitary confinement, but did not have access to phones, so they communicated with us through letters. So it's different state to state, but in the world of our play, these are men who are together on a certain area, you know, on a pod, and that's their that's where they are. There are moments where they're, of course, in their cells. There are moments during the day where they're isolated in their cells. But for the most part, throughout the day, you know, they're able to, within that one restricted area, they're able to move around freely.
If you joined us late, we're visiting with the director of the world premiere production of The Count by the Playmakers, and Catherine Hunter Williams is that director, stepping aside from her usual role at Playmakers as a great actress. Give us the elevator speech about why I should come see this production.
Well, I hope it will be an elevator speech. It might be a little bit longer, but you need to come and see it because these men are a reflection of all of us. There, but for the grace of God, could be any of us. And I know people will be like, well, no, not me. I would never. But you don't really know. I mean, we're all human. We're all capable of making terrible mistakes. There's been so much work done around, you know, Bryan Stevenson's book, Just Mercy, has been a huge, you know, bestseller, talking about his experience with working with men on death row. Michelle Law's book, The New Jim Crow, really helps people to understand how our justice system is racialized and how that actually works. So you need to come because it's a way of you being able to reflect your own, see your own humanity in the humanity of these men. They've done some terrible things. Lives were lost. There is no glossing over that. There's no shortchanging of the
tragedy. Are we going to like these guys, though?
I think so. I hope so.
Really? I mean, but
I think you'll understand them.
Well, just see here. We're thinking of death row.
Right.
These are the people who are generally, maybe unfairly, but generally speaking, these are the folks
that are the worst of the worst.
The worst of the crimes that got people angry and unreasonable.
Yeah.
And so it's not. It wouldn't be expected that I would fall in love with these people.
Right.
But am I going to fall in love with some
of
these guys?
Well, you know, I think I hope you will be able to understand them, to relate to them, and I don't want to say it's not. I don't think I'm concerned with whether the audience falls in love with them or not. My real goal is to honor what these men said, which is that we want people to know that we're human, and they are human beings, and that there is a sense of reflection and redemption, and you know, is there an element of forgiveness? Do we have that in our hearts? I know exactly what you mean. Most of us think of the men on death row as the worst of the worst. They basically get, you know, once you're sentenced, you get thrown away. But that's not really always the truth. And if we also can step back and understand how the choices that were laid before them in the paths of their lives, maybe as a society, we can actually then see where we can disrupt that. There are many points along the way where institutions that should have helped them, that should have saved them, that should have protected them, failed them. And I hope that the audience will walk away questioning, what part do we have in this? Where can I step in? And so our work on the school-to-prison pipeline kind of was a great segue into this piece, because where the schools failed, where the justice officials failed, where social workers failed, and I'm talking about when they were very, very young, moments where possibly the path that they were on could have been diverted. So I hope it helps us all to just say, so what can I do? You know, what kid do I see in school that might need an extra hand? Where am I putting my time and energy in terms of volunteering in my community? How am I helping to make sure that everybody, especially the children, we can't peek into everybody's life. We don't know what's going on behind everybody's door. But we can step in when we can see that somebody needs a hand. We can help to understand. I mean, you know, certainly helping kids with volunteering in schools and helping with education and helping with the social justice issues around food that exist in our community in Chapel Hill, around, you know, the issues around race and poverty and speaking up for those who don't have as loud a voice in our community. Those are the ways that we can help disrupt, you know, what's going on, understanding the impact of violence in the lives of these folks, understanding the impact of, you know, our gun laws and how those impact, how that the gun violence is also, and the drug abuse that is rampant, you know, that treatment is what is needed. It's also, I'm going to push people to, I hope, walk away and learn a little bit more about our judicial system. We are at a crisis moment right now where if we don't start to really understand and really examine the racial politics in this country,
What do you mean? What do you mean?
I mean to understand how the relationship between our justice system and race. And if you can step back and learn the history, and this is what I would challenge people to do. Like, we can't wait anymore for somebody to have
Let me interrupt you just for a second to frame this, so that although world premiere production of puts us in touch with men who I don't want to say have been victimized, but are, because of the way their lives have been constructed and the failure of society in some cases to intervene and get them on the right track, are locked away for the rest of their lives, or and they're going to die there, or they're going to be killed when they're executed. That part of that is a result. I'm hearing you say this, that we have a justice system that is terribly fraught with racism and an unfair system.
It's so many of these men, and this is a common thread that you'll see as well. So many of them had fathers who were incarcerated, and we know with the drug laws and the three strikes you're out laws and the sentencing changes that came about in the late 70s and the 80s and the 90s, for what many consider to be minor drug offenses, that families were just, you know, torn apart. And so one of the things that we see in this is that so many of these men have fathers that were incarcerated, have had family members that are incarcerated all across the line. There's a story in the play about a man who meets his cousin on death row. On death row, not in general population, but they encounter each other and they're both sentenced. So the legacy, understanding the legacy of all of that is helpful for all of us. Mm. I recommend, you know, you read The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. I recommend you read Just Mercy, just so everyone has a framework to understand where we're starting from. And this is the world that many of these men came out of. My experience with talking with them is that their reflection and understanding of how they got to where they are is just remarkable. For me, they are some of the most present human beings I've ever encountered. There is not a moment when I've been in a workshop with them where they're not completely present and with me in a way that those who do mindfulness try to strive to be, right? You know, I mean, but they are like, every moment is so precious and so valuable that they both don't waste a lot of time looking back and they don't waste a lot of time looking forward. They live in the now, in the moment. And I want to mention one other.
Let's take a break and we'll come back to that. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Catherine Hunter Williams, who's the director of a new production produced by Playmakers. It's called The Count. She and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. If you just joined us, I'm visiting with Catherine Hunter Williams. She's telling us about the Playmakers production along with the Hidden Voices organization in partnership of The Count. It's a world premiere. And Kathy, you're the director, and you're telling us all about it. We're just about out of time, but you got lots more to say.
I do. Well, I just have a couple of other things. I want to say that we have an exhibit that's a companion piece to this. It will be up at the Student Union on campus from it's up now about August 16th through the end of September, and that is pieces of art that were created and a little bit more of an exploration of the issue. So that's open to the public, and I want to encourage everyone to come by to the exhibit before you come to see the show. Playmakers has food trucks there now, so you can go to the exhibit and then go get something from the food truck and come to see the show. I would love to encourage people to do that. And I also want to add just one more quick thing about our partnership, which is that it's been such a special treat to have our designers and our production staff at Playmakers partner with us in this. It brings having it come full circle with my artistic family over there at PRC has just made it that much more of a special event for us. So I'm so, so grateful to the company for giving us the opportunity to do this. Really great.
Well, you've made some friends who we will get to know in a way in seeing the play. And is there a friendship that's built? Do you stay in touch with some of these people, or is it just all over when they tell you the story and you
Well, you know, the prison is very – all prisons are very clear about your rules and your regulations around working with inmates. So the workshops are still going on. Letters will probably – I'm sure will still come in. A big part of the project was actually what we call a call and response. So we have in the exhibit, you'll have the opportunity to go through the exhibit and write some thoughts, write some responses to the men's artwork, or you'll have a chance to write a response to the play. And then we try to send those back inside and share those with the men so that they can sort of see what the public is saying, and then and from those responses, they will then write us again. And so we have a conversation. Part of the whole project was creating a dialogue between those whose voices normally wouldn't be heard and people who normally wouldn't encounter these folks.
How do you feel that the lives of the prisoners are better as a result of what you've done, both in terms of creating the dramatic production and then also in hearing them speak and reacting to what they say? How does that make their life better?
Well, I think it makes it better in the sense that, they are getting to express their humanity, and they're getting to share the lessons that they have learned. They feel that it's important to, in a sense, it's a way to give back. It's a way to share a reflection, to share what lessons they have learned.
Has one of the lessons made any difference in your life? I mean, can you think of something that you learned from one of the prisoners that really, other than just, well, I've really appreciated his attitude that has changed your life?
I mean, I think their ability to be present and their ability to value and rejoice in every single moment has certainly impacted me. I walk away when I leave the workshop or after I read a letter, and I think, wow, you know, life out here is, you know, you're busy, you're hectic, you got this, you got that, we've got our phones, and, you know, we know how our lives are, right? We're so constantly going. But I walk away, and what I've really learned is that, you know, life is so precious, and it is so valuable, and everyone, even what we seem deemed to, what we might deem to be the lowest of the low, that there is something to learn, and people have something to contribute, that humanity is precious and it is valuable. And from, you know, making mistakes that I can't even imagine, from choices that some of them made that I just can't even comprehend in my own life, the ability to say, I'm flawed, I made a terrible mistake, but here's what I've learned. I'm human. And to ask forgiveness and to seek forgiveness, to give mercy. You know, I think it's Bryan Stevenson. I'm going to mangle this quote, but I think he says, you know, mercy is just when you give it to the unforgiving, to people who don't ask for it, to the undeserving. You know, we're at a point where I feel like we really need to reexamine how we love and who we forgive and how we move forward as a community, as a world community. And that's one of the lessons that they've taught me. Life is precious and every moment counts. And it's never too late to be redeemed.
Well, it's time for us to end, but I promise you that you would be able to tell us how to attend this production.
Okay, so
how to get tickets. So when is it going to be? And where should we go?
So it's part of PRC Squared, which is at in our Paul Green Theater at the Center for Dramatic Art. It's actually in the Keenan Theater, the smaller theater that's right next door to the Paul Green. So you can call the Playmakers box office. We run August 23rd through the 27th, so it's about 6 productions. Not this weekend, but next weekend, and call the box office and get your tickets and come on out. We also, of course, have, as part of PRC Squared, they always have a second act called a talkback. So we have a great series of guests coming in to do talkbacks, reflections, and that's where we really want the community to be there, to be involved, to ask questions. And
more information on the Playmakers webpage,
yes.
And we'll have a link to that on our link to this program. In the meantime, thanks, Kathy. It's just been great to talk to you about your debut production and the world premiere production. For those of you who listened, thanks so much for being with us, and I look forward to being with you again before you know it.